As we were calling different pastors and inviting people to come, one thing kept coming up, and that was, what about the dads? What about the men? How do we get the men into the church? And we didn't really have time to bring up another, to add another session in. So I've just asked everyone to be thinking about it, and just to share some thoughts on that as we get this session started. And then we just want to open it up to any questions that might have come up in your mind as you were listening today, or just random questions, I guess. But we have quite a bit of time. So, Pastor Spiller, why don't we just start with you, and we'll just work this way.
How to work with the dads. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to let somebody else start.
Do we need to?
Now, in the question with this, if we are in a home setting where you don't have dads there, you probably have to find the dad. I would say this, in a general setting, we have men here, pastors. How you love your wife, how you love your children, and care for them is going to lay the foundation. And I know that's very broad. But you don't have a message unless you do it. And I say that because shortly before the plane crash, I had a heart for ministry, but I didn't have a heart to have my wife and my children be where they needed to be. And we have a book out there, and we describe how God used, actually worked before the plane crash, but how God worked in our life. And we have a very merciful God. We have a very gracious God. So when I say what I just said, I'm not being cute. Because you have to have that in yourself. Are you with me in this? And I would say when all your workers, if they'll have that heart, and God will have to open doors to work with the dad. I don't think you can do a program. I don't. We've had dads that catch a vision, but it is God that did the work. And I think if you have that foundation where you yourself can speak to them and you say, well, I've really messed up, you have a, if you will follow God's principles, you have a greater opportunity out of your brokenness to minister to them. If you go in like, hey, what's wrong with you? I've never had a problem like that. They're probably not going to listen to you. Are you with me on this? And I think if we can communicate that, like we're going to call, have people help us working within our church, we want them to understand that as well. I don't know if that would be, I think, a good place to start. That immediately is what I thought of earlier. And because I know out of myself, I can talk with a dad who's struggling with something. Because normally it's not bad things. Now, if they're struggling with sin, they have to deal with sin. And some men do. Some men, they're flat, they're in fornication, pornography, and you have to get to the heart of that. I mean, I get real, you know, I get like to talk real plain, and if they want help, they will get help, and they'll listen. If they don't want help, they're not going to listen to you. If that makes sense. I'll tell you a story of two men. One of them is a bachelor's and master's degree from a well-known Christian university. In Christian ministry for years, wife, a graduate from the same place. He came to me, they're separated, and he's worried about his kids. He came to me for help. I just looked at him and listened to him for an hour or so. I said, brother, I don't think you've ever loved your wife. What? She's doing this, this, and this. And we've known him for, 30 years, 25 years? I don't think he's ever loved his wife. He's married to another lady now. Now another man came to us. He's living in his car. They're from Ohio. His wife, he had had an injuries, laid off from work. They worked in St. Louis. His wife is living with another man in their house, in this man's house. It's in my office. And he said, I don't know what to do with my wife. And because his kids are crazy. They're just going everywhere. And he said, I don't know how to work with my wife. I'm living in my car. How do I win her heart back? I said, she's not here, so let's talk about you. And I mean, we started talking. I mean, he started confessing sin. We're in the office. We went out to the altar and we just knelt down. And literally, he cried till the carpet was wet. He called his wife and asked forgiveness. She's living with another man in their house. And a few days later, she called me and she said, he's confessing sin and asking forgiveness. Is he for real? I said, I think he is. He'll probably mess up again. He had an anger problem, pornography problem. It goes on. And it's too much to get into. It's unbelievable stuff. That was in 2000. By 2001, they were back together. And today, they are working at winning the hearts of their children and their grandchildren. And they are counseling with couples who help them. We've had him speak in our church. He's awesome. He calls me and he says, you taught me so much. And I said, brother, you're way beyond me. About some of this stuff. I mean, it's awesome. But you see, you have to have that message, and you give that to them. He thinks I walk on water. He's got stuff inside and stuff that I've never thought about. But again, take people where they're at and have that in your heart, because that's where it's going to have to be. That's, again, one at a time. They all need it, but not all want it. That other family, they didn't want it. To this day, he would talk to missionaries in our church and say, my pastor won't do this, this, and this. I can't do it. And I've talked too long. But he didn't have it in his heart. This is something we have to have. It's so much in our heart. I'm sorry.
I just agree with what he said. There's if there's some kind of a prison in your town or jail or whatever, and somebody wants to minister there, they've got to really have a heart for it. It's absolutely essential.
I think the one thing that came to my mind as pastors were asking me this, as I was hearing the same question over and over, was in part some of the things that we experienced after we lost my dad, and the thought that kept coming back to me, we need men who are chivalrous. And in order to have a society of men that are chivalrous, as Christians, we need an army of knights. We really do. We need men who will go out and purpose to reach other men and to help them to see that they can have a family that is strong. And if you look back at the Knights' Code of Honor, what they were to do was to care for the fatherless, the needy, the widows. And that's part of that. It is a very, something, again, we see as kind of a soft thing, but it's not. And I think we just need men who will go out and reach purposefully. It's not going to be easy, but soldiers who will go recruit new soldiers.
Men need men. We live in a society that has now created an atmosphere where a man being close to another man is wrong. You just can't do that. It gives the wrong picture. Men need men. I need a close friend. And we have got to open up ourselves to be able to reach some of these men who need another man, but they don't know where to go. It's going to mean, as we've heard, giving of ourselves in ways that we don't always understand. But men need men just to be friends. They need a camaraderie. They need to be able to do things together. We think of, the men always talk, yeah, the women are going off shopping together to go spend some time. The women need to... Men need to do the same thing. Maybe not to go shopping. But they need to do something together. Because men need men. And we got to give ourselves to do that.
Okay, so now we'd like to just open it up to any questions that you might have. Because we're running behind, I'm not sure we're going to get to take our next break because the gal who's speaking at the very beginning has an appointment that she has to get to right after she shares. So if you need to get a drink or use the restroom or anything like that while we're doing the question and answer, please feel free to do that. Should we just pass this mic around, or Levi's got one? Okay, so if you have a question, just raise your hand, and Levi has a mic.
They're just too proud, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get more phone calls from the ladies than I do from the guys.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean that I don't counsel with the guys, but more so, the ladies are calling for somebody that
So just in case you couldn't hear the question is, what do you do when you have somebody call who's looking for a room? How do you help? And a lot of times it's the women, because the men won't pick up the phone and call. They have them do it for them. My first response would be to look at this. What resources are already available in the community? You may not have the funds right now to do that, but what's already out there in Great Falls? The other thing is, if you can set up some guidelines of just a process that you're going to go through and ask them certain questions to find out how they got where they are and how you can walk with them past just getting them that room and go through that process of requiring honesty and verifying things. And then just see where they really are, and then have those resources at, you know, available and easy to get to, so that you can say, you know what, I can't give you a room right now, but I know of this other organization that does that. Why don't we go over there and I'll meet you there, or someone from my church will meet you there, and we'll see what we can, you know, get going, and we'll see where we can go from there. There's a lot of needs that we can't meet, and that's why knowing what else is available is really important. And if it's something that happens a lot, it might be something to be praying about. Lord, is this something that you want us to bring into the scope of our ministry? Is this something that you want us to be involved in? Anybody
else? You said that it would be good to develop a plan of a verification process or questions that you would ask. Do you have a sample list of those kinds of questions?
I don't. That's something that I've been wanting to work towards. I just don't have them written down. And a lot of times, you guys do, don't you? Yeah.
Because sometimes that's hard to come up with.
Well, we just keep it real simple. It's like, who are you? And we write their name, address, phone number, your kids, you know? And what is your need? And we'll write it down. And then we'll ask, why do you have this need? And they maybe have sickness. Anything can be there. And then we'll ask, what is God doing and saying? Because we always get to a certain place. I don't care. God's working in everybody's life, not just mine, you know. Why are you here? What can we do? It is amazing how people respond to that for us.
Well, I've noticed that having that verification process, like you were saying, really helps people. Either they're gonna stay with what they did the house, or they go out to that one.
Well, what we do is they come to a service before we go through the questionnaire. And we don't have the money to help everybody. So we ask them to attend a service. And then we go through the questionnaire. And then our men already know we have some we're dealing with. What do we have in our benevolent fund? And they'll, you know, we try to make that, we facilitate it, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Take too long time.
we had a lady, another lady brought her in, and we, it took probably 30 minutes after the service. And her ride came walking in, and she said, "What is wrong with you guys? Can't you just give her the money? She's got to get home. I got to get home." I mean, yeah, that's, you know, I looked at her and I said, "Hey, we're just going through the procedure we normally do. If you went to Social Security office, you'd sit there 2 or 3 hours, wouldn't you?" She said, "Yes." And then she quieted down. You know, what, you know, is that, and I would, but we do that, and we just, honestly, we've had some really good responses from people. I don't know, I could tell you stories, but I know we're on short, but. We had one where I always have somebody with me, you know, or if somebody, if I'm not involved with two people, had one of the men in our church, and this lady's, she had two car payments, and she couldn't make her house payment. And she's going through this whole list of stuff, and it's so bizarre. Finally, Brother Sweeney, one of the men in our church, he looked at her, and he said, "Ma'am, I think you're going to have to choose, do I want to live in my house, or do I want to live in my car?" And, you know, we settled the issue, I think. You know what I mean? Anyway.
I think, too, that comes back to that issue of discernment and what is healing the diseases and going to that point of why are you at this point? What has led to this? Is this because your relationship is broken with your family and you've lost all your resources through an unforeseeable event in your family? Is this because you haven't managed your funds well? Is it because you... I remember one summer between trips to Russia, I worked at the Motel 6 cleaning rooms. And one morning there was a staff meeting and our manager said, "If so-and-so asks you for money, do not give it to her because she's been gambling again." What is leading up to that point? What is the disease that's causing her to have this? And I know, too, there's a certain sort of subculture among young women in Montana that thrives on drama. I don't know why, but it's... It's not just Montana. I noticed it here more than any place I've been. It just, it's like we thrive. I don't. They just thrive on it. I'm like, I don't want any more drama than I've got. Mine is enough. But what is that? It's almost like an addiction. And we need to look at that. That's one of those things that it's one of those diseases that needs to be healed. Did you have something?
Growing up fatherless.
Yes, very true. She said thriving on drama has a lot to do with growing up fatherless. Exactly. It is hard. It is hard. It is. Very much so. We have about 2 minutes before we need to go into our next session. Do we have any other questions?
Got one over here.
We don't actually foster, but one of the things that's really on my heart is finding ways to walk alongside of families that are fostering. Just to be there to support and encourage. But I definitely, actually, in our next session, Shauna, we'll be talking about fostering. Anything else? Going one? Mine actually shuts off at 11, so.
We talk about helping people, but what Miss Rachel's talking about is being discerning to find the need. We had a family that was traveling from, they're traveling back to Texas. They're from coming from Minnesota, seeing some people. And their truck engine blew, crossing a bridge just close to us. They're in a motel. And they called and asked for two nights. And one of our questions, I figured Jesus said, what do you need? There's a blind man sitting there. Well, I just need this food. Or, you know what I'm saying? But he asked, what is your need? And just assume it. I said, well, what is your need? Well, we just need two nights. I said, sounds like you need to get your engine fixed in a truck. Well, you can't do that. So I verified, called the manager, and we took care of a couple of rooms. But they came to church, and it was over Easter. We had a breakfast, and they came for that. And then I just said to the church, you know, this family needs an engine. And told them what kind of truck they have, what kind of engine. One of our guys said, hey, my neighbor wants me to pull an engine. It's that engine. Say, can we take an offering just to cover the stuff? So the guys pulled the engine out of that truck. We took an offering for the gaskets and all the stuff that they'd have to have put an engine in that truck for them. And then they went on home to Texas. And we called and talked with the manager. I said, this is what we're doing. And he said, wow. Well, we'll take up money here with our workers to help pay the rest of their trip home. And I don't know how they covered the rooms. It is amazing. He was so excited. I mean, just saying. And we got to witness she had just been saved 2 weeks or 2 months before. And he listened to the gospel, and he got saved. And I mean, isn't this just, I leaned back and I said, God, before this, wouldn't it be nice if it was a big enough church, we just put an engine in for him? He said, just watch and see what I'm going to do. You know, and so, I mean, God isn't, we can't always do that. But isn't that exciting? It's just like, wow, God is just awesome, you know. And they got to see an awesome God. And I'll turn it over to you, because I'll just keep going.
Okay, anything else? All right, since we're running so far behind, I really had hoped we would have a long time for question and answer, but we're really running tight. So we'll go ahead and we'll put our chairs away, and for the next session, we'll be hearing from Shauna Hausman, and